This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
Yet again, the CDC is reversing its policy on mask use. Yet again. And I imagine we're going to have the same conversation in about 3 weeks. And then again, 2 weeks after that, then maybe they'll go a month. And then maybe they'll go a few weeks after that. Then they'll surprise us and just change a policy recommendation overnight. That is the world we now live in, where we're no longer listening to the science or the data. We're pretending the science and the data mimics what happens to be a Democratic talking point at the same time. And they don't seem to care that they're sending mixed messages over all of this. Because the original pitch about the vaccine was it will protect you. And it will be a way for you to get out of having to wear a mask. No one wants to wear a mask. They're annoying. They're uncomfortable. They're suffocating. And a way to get out of it is to get the vaccine. Don't care which vaccine you get. You've got three options here. Get one of them, and you will be free. Then you tell people to wear a mask if they're vaccinated. Which then, of course, pushes back on the main point that you were using to sell the vaccine. But now they're saying the way to get out of wearing a mask when vaccinated is to get the unvaccinated vaccinated. Which, number one, creates animosity towards the unvaccinated, which, by the way, you would have no idea if someone is or is not vaccinated unless you demand to see their passport. And number two, why would anyone believe you now when you previously said you could drop the mask if you get the vaccine? You said the same thing before. So now you're just switching it all up. And this policy that is being pushed out there seems tailor-made to shame people, to bully people, to force people into getting the vaccine. I've not changed my position on this. I think people should get the vaccine in consultation with their doctor. It is what I did. I would not recommend someone else do something differently than what I was willing to do. I don't believe the conspiracies out there. I do, however, think that the way this has all been rolled out has been consistently conflicting, misleading, unfair, unwise. The new policy says if you're in a hot zone for COVID cases, not hospitalizations, not deaths, but cases, you should wear a mask indoors regardless of your vaccination status. And then, of course, once the CDC comes out there, then it gets picked up by the local politicians who now have cover to push the mandates again. They're the ones who are pushing this and will actually push this. And I think that that is a problem. Because ultimately, what is going to end up happening is that we're probably going to get that here in Washington State.
That's why I'm wearing the mask. I got vaccinated, but I saw that, and I don't know, it's kind of a bummer, but also trying to do my part to stay safe and keep everyone else safe.
Hey, I don't like it, and I don't really want it, but I'll do it, yeah, and stuff. I like it. Thank you, Kyra 7. Can I continue? No, we're good. Thanks. No, but I have so much more to say. You know, we're good, Katie. Thank you. Now, where are the hot zones here in Washington State? Kings, Snohomish, Pierce, Yakima, Spokane, and Thurston. Those are the counties that have a high case rate right now. Noticeably missing are more eastern counties, or any county outside of the ones I just mentioned, that got Trump supporters in higher numbers. Remember, we were told that this is all being pushed by the Trumpers. The 50-year-old white dude who supports Trump who decided to be a bioreactor facility. And of course, people here in Washington, especially Western Washington, especially King County, will be pleased to comply so they can further tell us how they're a hero.
First, I heard about that, but I mean, if that's what it's going to take for us to do it, then I'd be willing to do that.
Yeah, we know. You'll be willing to do everything except maybe look at the data, which you should. Because the cases are disproportionately Hispanic. Whites make the largest number at 52% of the cases, but they represent 68% of the state. versus 29% of the cases are Hispanic, though that population represents 13% of the population. So they are overrepresented in the cases. But yes, it's the 50-year-old white Trump supporter. The 7-day average of deaths in Washington State. Do you have any guess what it is for us to be talking about another wave here in Washington that would require people to put on a mask while indoors, regardless of their vaccination status? You have any idea what that number might be? The 7-day average of deaths in Washington State. I will give you a hint. I'll give you two hints for context. A month ago, it was 12. January 1st, it was 36. So presumably, it would have to be higher than 12, maybe not as high as 36, presumably.
Yeah, so
somewhere in between.
I have a range to guess from. This is good. Usually, I need
usually
range.
I just give you a number, and you're just way off.
Yeah, of course. So between those two numbers, I'll say we're at 30%.
Well, not percent.
Well, 30
deaths.
30 deaths
on the 7-day average.
Okay, 30 deaths. Yeah.
Okay. I set you up. It's a trick. You would assume, based on the way that folks are talking, that the number is actually higher than it was a month ago. It's lower. It's 5.
It's lower than 12?
Yeah, it's 5. It's lower. Deaths have been going down consistently since the start of the year. Consistently. Can we say that again? Deaths have gone down consistently. But the way we have these conversations makes it sound like the deaths are through the roof. They were never through the roof, statistically speaking, in Washington State. And that's good. But we are at a five-death, seven-day average in Washington State. And still the deaths are represented in the higher age range of 65 plus and really 80 plus. And yet, everyone needs to wear a mask. That's fair for everyone, says Dr. Chris Spitters from Snohomish County.
The most straightforward way to verify that all unvaccinated people are wearing a mask in such settings is for everyone to wear a mask in those settings.
How is that fair, though? How is that fair for everybody? You know, Ben Shapiro, who's on this station at 6 p.m., right after the show, he sent out a tweet that I thought made a lot of sense, even though some people, I think, took it in a harsher way than it was intended. So there are a couple issues here. If you have the COVID vaccine and you end up getting COVID, you're one of the few breakthrough cases. You will not die. You will not even be put in a hospital on average. And this is not even on average. This is the vast majority of people who end up getting COVID and being one of those breakthrough cases. The impact on the individual is minimal. Some of them don't even realize it. They're asymptomatic. Now, on the other hand, the Delta variant is believed to have the person who has contracted it to have a higher viral load of COVID. I've heard numbers up to 1,000 times the amount of COVID could be shed. I don't know if that has been fully officially put out there, but that's what some of the studies suggest. Thus, you are still not at a high risk of any negative effect of COVID, but you could pass it along to someone who is not vaccinated, right? Ben makes the point, why should all of us who got the vaccine have to completely change everything to accommodate people who are choosing not to get the vaccine? What sense does that make? All of the information is out there. You are an adult. You get to decide whether or not you're going to get vaccinated. You can choose to believe what you want. You can choose, I hope to talk to a doctor and let them talk to you one-on-one about all of this and then make a decision at that point. But you are an adult. You get to make that decision. I know that we are increasingly going down the road of not having adults make their own decisions. The administration today announced just about an hour ago that they are considering, the Biden administration is considering whether or not they're going to mandate federal employees to get the vaccine. That would be unheard of. And that should be alarming to people. Where does that stop? Where does it stop? But as of right now, you can get the vaccine if you want it. So why is everyone changing everything to accommodate folks who don't want it? We can only do so much. The people who are as hardcore as they seem on this issue, they want to be seen as heroes. These are the folks who are saying, I'm doing this for you. they want the social currency that comes with that kind of public support for mankind. They don't really care about others. They just care about themselves and how they are perceived by you. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text message. I take on that grifter, Burien Mayor Jimmy Mata, and show his claim of a white supremacy hate crime attack is total nonsense. I take it on in my latest blog, filled with art to make my point. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770 or go to ktth.com directly and check it out. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
I find it hard to look at today's January 6th commission, this hearing, and not see all of the political theater in it. I find it hard to look at what happened today and not see the political theater. And I say that not to dismiss what happened on January 6th. I believe, I said it at the time, I haven't changed my mind, I believe it to be a domestic act of terror. Now, it's not one comparable to what we saw in, say, Oklahoma with the bombing, right? I don't think democracy was on the line. A QAnon guy in a goofy outfit was not the threat that some people want you to believe. However, what happened was incredibly serious. What happened was criminal. Every single person who broke the law should pay a consequence. Every single person who did anything illegal that day. And there was a substantial portion of the folks who were there who were in fact violent. They attacked police officers. Their intent was to do harm. They did harm. However, unlike almost every single Democrat in Congress, I will be consistent. They won't be. You need to be consistent. And that means acknowledging what happened on January 6th the same way we acknowledge, and only we acknowledge, the fact that we had a year of violence in this country. Riots, domestic terrorism. We had an insurrection here in Seattle of a mob that was armed, taking over six city blocks, including a police station. They did it with actual weapons. We had police getting attacked every single week, including an attempted mass murder. Do you remember the time where Antifa thugs used quick dry cement to seal shut the door of a police precinct while outside people were trying to burn the building down? One person was arrested and is now in jail. That happened. We called it out, rightly. Democrats said nothing. There's been no investigation into any of that. In fact, the only investigation would have been the media asking for these text messages coming from Mayor Jenny Durkan and some others in the city to get a sense of what kind of communication was going on. And then miraculously, somehow, definitely in no coordinated way, all of those text messages were deleted. No coordination, even though several people apparently deleted text messages. How weird is that? But I'm supposed to look at what Democrats did today and will continue to do and think that it's somehow noble. A process that kicked Republicans off the committee because of the questions they would ask, like, why, despite intelligence 3 weeks earlier suggesting some danger was posed, did no one actually offer any additional assistance to the Capitol Police? Why did they not prepare? Now, that answer could be provided today. It's not being. Instead, we have Congressman Jamie Raskin, the Democrat from Maryland, doing this.
Sergeant Cannell, Officer Fanone, Officer Hodges, Officer Dunn, you are great law enforcement officers and a hero to law enforcement officers across the country. You're great public servants. You're a hero to public servants across the country. But you are great Americans and you are heroes to all of America.
Do you see what we're hearing right now? Do you hear it? This is PR. The party that hates cops, the party that defunds cops, now taking the opportunity to use these cops as pawns to give them some cover.
And long after you are gone, you will be remembered as heroes to our country, along with your fellow officers. And those who attacked you and those who beat you are fascist traitors to our country and will be remembered forever as fascist traitors.
The only intent here is to focus on Trump, to treat his supporters as fascist traitors, to paint a broad brush, presuming that all Trump supporters are like what happened on January 6th, and to feign support for police. That is the intent. It is all political. Raskin doesn't care about the police, nor does any Democrat who stayed silent in the face of months-long physical assaults against cops. All of a sudden, they're the police's best friend. Didn't you know it's Republicans who defunded the police, not the Democrats? Pramila Jayapal, Congresswoman here in Seattle, she had the audacity to go out on Twitter to claim January 6th is being whitewashed. She has said nothing about the Antifa violence in her own city. She has said nothing. Whitewashed? We have hundreds of prosecutions right now pending. Here's Liz Cheney, the one of two Republicans who don't like Trump, hand-selected by Nancy Pelosi to serve on this committee.
If those responsible are not held accountable, and if Congress does not act responsibly, this will remain a cancer on our constitutional republic, undermining the peaceful transfer of power at the heart of our democratic system. We will face the threat of more violence in the months to come, and another January 6th every 4 years.
We have still active and ongoing investigations. We have people who are currently on trial. We have people currently awaiting trial for what happened on January 6th. This idea that we are not paying attention, that we are not taking this seriously, is not borne out by the actual evidence in front of us. However, on the other hand, what is also true? We have multiple people who were involved in actual riots and attacks on police, burning buildings to the ground, attempting to burn buildings to the ground. Some of them didn't even get arrested. Some of them did and were let go. All in the name of politics. It's politics then, it's politics now. That's the truth of the situation. Liz Cheney knows that. The Democrats know that. The media knows that. They are making these decisions so that they can continue to focus on Trump, which they believe is going to hurt what right now looks like an inevitable red wave in the midterms, according to the polling as of now. They see the same polling, and that's why they're doing this the way they're doing it. They're trying to stop that polling from becoming a reality. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, SPD Chief Adrian Diaz is going to stop by. He's going to talk about maybe gang violence being responsible for everything that's going on in Seattle with all the gun violence. We'll see when he stops by in just a moment. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Seattle saw a weekend of significant gun violence. It would appear that we're on pace to exceed last year's 26-year high homicide rate. So what exactly is being done? What could be done to address this? Joining me on the line is Seattle Police Department Interim Chief Adrian Diaz. Chief Diaz, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Jason. I appreciate it.
So the focus has been on guns. When I hear you speak, when I hear the mayor speak, when I hear other politicians speak, who's firing the guns?
You know, we have had such a random area of shots fired and shootings. Right now, we've had an increase in homeless and RV shootings and shots fired. We are seeing much more drive-by shootings. We actually, our gang activity and shootings related to gang activity is up to around 16 to 18%. But we're actually seeing a variety of different types of disputes that are resulting in gunfire.
So you just mentioned two of the leading causes, at least of the gunshots, and obviously there is correlation to the deaths. So on the one hand, the information I have is about 17% of the gunshots being fired have some connection to either an encampment or the homeless population. Then you've got, to your point, gang violence increasing. Where are they getting the guns?
You know, we did that is stuff that we are currently working on with ATF. We did some research from 2018, 2019. We know that about 33% of the guns recovered are stolen guns. But, you know, we have a couple gun places that have had a little bit more significant amount of guns that have been sold out of those locations and that have actually turned up in more crime scenes. So we do look at, you know, federal firearm licenses in conjunction with ATF. But, you know, right now, you know, like I said, about 33% are stolen handguns that we're noticing on the streets.
Can you clarify when you say that you've tied at least some of the guns to potentially a store or you know, a certain number of stores? Are you implying that they're selling the guns to the criminals who are using them, or that they just happen to be potentially getting stolen from the person who purchased the gun at the gun store? Because obviously, if you're looking just in the Seattle region, not many places to even buy guns. So I'm assuming that that could be the common issue there.
We usually look at it. Sometimes it's usually straw purchases where you have a person that is purchasing multiple guns. And then from that person, they're either starting to report them stolen and then giving them out, or they're selling them out as well. So there's a variety of ways that we're trying to track that information. But we do focus on what we call straw purchasers, so people that are purchasing large amounts of guns.
So it's not necessarily the gun shop's fault, is what you're saying, and it's more of the people who are purchasing them illegally, or are laws not being followed on the gun shop's part?
It could be a variety of different ways. And so, yeah, it could. Some of it is when you know that you're selling, you know, 30 or 40 guns to the same person, you know, and there's no red flags from the gun shop owner, that might be an issue. But it is people that are, you know, legally buying the mm-hmm. guns. And then they're getting them out because they have the ability to legally buy them, and then they're getting them out into the areas. And then sometimes you also have the random cases of you know, burglary where, you know, they'll, you know, we had this a couple years ago where people were driving into, you know, pawn shops or gun shops and with their vehicle, you know, opening up the front doors and then, you know, getting in and stealing a whole bunch of guns, too. So we, you know, we do occasionally have that that occurs as well.
The reason why I'm sort of pinning down on these particular questions is that they're the way that some politicians talk about the gun problem. They make it sound like it's just otherwise law-abiding citizens who legally purchase a weapon and decide to just go around and murder people. But it sounds like, obviously, number one, we know that that's not the case. It sometimes can be the case, but we know that that's not the leading cause at all. And it sounds like gang violence and then just your average criminal behavior is behind at least the surge that we're seeing. Is that accurate?
I think for right now, based on the information, that's accurate. You know, we have a lot of guns that we don't recover where we have shell casings, but we might not recover the guns. And so you miss that kind of information mm-hmm. or data. But, you know, as we do recover and we're able to kind of test them, we go through a whole process through our national ballistics testing process. And so those ones, then we can then say, yes, for sure, these are, you know, this gun was stolen. Mm-hmm. This gun was, you know, purchased at this, you know, store. This is the history of that gun. And so you have a lot more information to work with.
Chief Adrian Diaz joining me on the line as we talk about the rise in gun violence in Seattle. A lot of it, as you just said, is being committed by, or suspect the committing is being done by, gang members. What role does the current staffing crisis that you are experiencing play in the ability to address this? Obviously, we know you can't really do proactive policing in the same way that you could be doing if you had a full force. But beyond that, what role does that play?
Well, you know, when we have, you know, when we look at an officer, and when we're down almost, you know, last year with 186 officers, we have over 100 officers that have left this year. You know, you're looking at 300 officers. We've hired some of that, so, you know, not all of those have been deployed out as full officers because they're in their training phase. But that's still, an officer is 2,000 hours of patrol time. So if I've lost a couple hundred officers, you're looking at 400,000 hours worth of proactive policing that is not happening. And that is a lot of time to just go out and be visible presence and, you know, being able to be out when the nightclubs are opening up and making sure that, the nightclubs are safe and being able to be in areas where there's hot spots of shots fired and making sure that we are able to deploy officers to those areas on a regular basis. And so when you're down that many officers, that does impact our ability to do that. And the only other way sometimes is doing that is putting officers on overtime.
Yeah.
And you only have a certain amount of budget that you have, and you're trying to make sure that you're also addressing all of the issues that you've also got going out throughout the city as well.
At the same time, we've got a new set of bills that are now in effect that govern policing, that reimagine policing in some significant ways. And so you have indicated you're not as concerned with the changes as some other police chiefs and sheriffs have indicated. So I want to go through just a few specific scenarios that I've at least heard come up and tell me from your perspective what the answer would be. So if a suspect in one of the weekend shootings in Pioneer Square generally matches, you just see some guy who generally matches the description of a suspect, it would normally for you, it would be enough to satisfy your curiosity. Do you have probable cause to make an arrest to satisfy the new laws on use of force?
So if we only had a reasonable suspicion, yep, and we believe that they might be involved in criminal activity, hence the shooting that occurred, but we don't have it that actually determines that they actually committed the crime of that, and we go to stop them, and they decide to want to go away, it's going to challenge our officers whether they're going to be able to use force to detain them or not.
Isn't that a concern, though? I mean, because you've downplayed some of the concern.
And we do know that there are going to be impacts from these legislations. We have already made significant changes in our policies over the last 10 years, being under the consent decree. The majority of what the bills are that have asked for certain reforms are stuff that we already currently do and enact. But I do think we are going to see those challenges.
Yeah.
And I've noted that we don't, as part of the law, that the model policy doesn't actually have to be shown to us until next year of July of 2022. So it makes it there's a lot of angst on the officers' perspective is that, like, we don't have a model policy, and now we're asked to go out and still do our best with trying to understand what the legislation is asking of us. And if we don't do it right, we potentially could be decertified. And so that's where I think the biggest concern is trying – you want to make sure as a leader of an organization like myself, I want to make sure that I give the best expectations of what our officers can and cannot do. And when there is a lot of gray area, that's where it becomes a challenge.
But that seems to be a massive concern that I would feel like would warrant you sounding the alarms. Going from reasonable suspicion to probable cause. I mean, in the scenario I just gave you, probable cause would include, I guess, the guy with the weapon in his hand at the time that the officer stops him, or the guy admitting that he, in fact, was the shooter, right? What would need to be satisfied if you see a suspect that you're pretty damn sure is the person who's guilty because of what you know, but what would you need to have present to establish probable cause to make an arrest?
A witness, says that's the person that did the shooting. Like even just that night alone, we had a witness saying that there was a possible suspect in that shooting standing next to the fire truck. And so officers, take that person into custody. We determined that it wasn't, the person wasn't, in fact, a part of that. So, you do have those types of situations because is a crime committed? Is this person more likely to commit the crime is the standard for probable cause. And so officers are having to make that in real time. I think
it's a high bar.
Yeah. And I think that is, I think when we look at our policies and practices and everything that we've, done as far as reform, I think it's going to be a lot more difficult for other agencies that haven't gone through the reform efforts that we have. So, do I have concern? I do have concerns, but I don't think it is as much as other agencies because we have seen already significant changes in what we've done.
But to be clear, you have not gotten rid of reasonable suspicion up until the law changed, correct? This was not part of the training.
No.
Okay. So, and that's the part that I think
we can still make the stop. I mean, we can still stop somebody for what we believe them to be involved in criminal activity.
But they could just say, I'm not, and I'm going to leave, and you have to let them go.
And that's where the challenge can be, yes.
Yeah, because if criminals know that, they're going to take advantage of that. I mean, we've seen criminals taking advantage of our permissive drug laws, just carrying less product on them so that they don't actually get popped for drug dealing because we don't prosecute or arrest really for possession. So isn't that something that's weighing on your mind, that this idea that the criminals actually know what the law now says, and as long as they don't really have a weapon on them at the time that's clearly showing, they can just say, no, I'm going to leave now. You don't have probable cause.
You know, that could very well be, but we also, just in that Belltown shooting, we were able to make stops. We were able to make an arrest and recover guns as well. So, you know, our officers have done a great job of still going out and focusing on what they need to do to make the community safe. I know it is a challenge for them. It's a challenge for, policing in general. But we have an obligation, and I think we've done an amazing job of making sure we reduce force. Like right now in crisis, cases, we use it maybe 1.5% of the time. So, I've got to make sure that officers are still continuing to go out and do that work. There is now an understanding that if the person does want to walk away, that we've got to be all right with it. And that's based on the new legislation. And, you know, if that changes, if there's more guidance, then we'll adapt and adjust to that as well.
So last question before we let you go. I know you can't say much about the decision that's coming to you as to whether or not you're going to fire two officers who were found to have been near the Capitol on the grass, but not actually participating in any of the rioting. Just can you tell us where the process currently stands?
Yeah, so they have a due process right. They have what they call a Laudermill hearing. It is based on a court case. And they have an opportune time to talk in front of the chief, which is me, and explain either the circumstances or disprove what the allegations might be. And that is 30 days from the finding. So in a couple of weeks, they'll have that opportunity to be in front of me.
And are you confident that comments you made in the past about how you would deal with this would not show a bias on your end, that you'll be able to listen to them and the situation that they're in without, already predetermining your position?
You know, my job is to make sure that when there's actions that need to hold people accountable, that I do hold people accountable. And when there are actions that I don't feel warrant a level of discipline, then I have to make those decisions. And it's not easy being the chief. Because you are having to see a variety of different discipline type cases. But I also, know that we have an expectation to the community and to making sure that we have the best police department and we have the best officers and they're doing the right thing. And that is what I am going to make sure that we do.
There you go. Chief Adrian Diaz, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. You take care.
You as well. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show, live on this Tuesday afternoon. I love a good game show, a quality game show, a game show where there's a lot of drama, there's a lot on the line, like the future of our country.
What the heck did Joe Biden say?
This is a part of the show where we try to figure out what in the world did Joe Biden just say? And we have a twofer today because he said two things that don't quite make sense. Now, we start first during a speech in which he was announcing something or other, but kind of got lost in some of the details.
Senator Casey, Congressman Scott, Congressman, where is he? There you are, Paul. You understand this better than anybody does. Yeah. And I want to thank you, Congressman, for all your work. Okay. And I want to thank you all for being here.
Okay.
Second, by the way, where's Mom? Is she here?
Watching.
Oh, she's watching. Okay, I thought you looked. I said, Mom is out there. I was going to ask her to stand up. But, Mom, you can't stand up if you're home.
Whose mom is he talking about? He never...
No, and it's not his mom.
He just moved. It's clearly not his mom. He's 112 years old. He just moved on.
Is it Congress? What's your name?
Scott.
Congress, where are you at? Where is he at? That's one of my favorite congressmen.
Congress, where is he at? Who's mom? And why is the mom part important? What is he talking about? Seriously, what is he talking about? And of course, no one stops and asks him afterwards, whose mother? And I suppose in the grand scheme of things, you would say, well, this is, you know, small issue. Who cares? What if he's actually talking about his own mother? And they're just going along with it and say, no, she's at home watching. Remember? Pop, pop.
Or it's like the most massive your mom joke of all time, and he is just roasting someone. Hey,
but
where's
did he forget the punchline?
Yeah. Probably, hey, where's your mom?
Okay. So this is nothing. Nothing. In comparison to a statement that he made while being called over from the press corps as he was walking to leave the White House. You got the helicopter in the background making the noise. Maybe he didn't hear the question, but a question was shouted at him. And he walks over to the reporters and he says this.
What must be what?
Okay. Let's listen one more time to try to figure out what he just said.
What must be what?
There has been speculation that he said something very personal about his hygiene. And I fear that if I tell you what it is, you now can't get it out of your head. It's like the Laurel
Yanni,
Yanni thing. Like once you hear something, you can't get it out of your head. We'll play it one more time. Listen.
What must be what?
So when I heard it, I thought I heard it. My butt's been wiped.
See, and I read it before I heard it, so now it's the only thing I hear.
I heard it first, and then I read it, and I thought it was a joke. I thought this was the bad lip syncing thing on YouTube.
Bad lip reads.
Bad lip reads. Listen again.
My butt's been wiped.
My butt's been wiped. So I'm going to assume that's not what he said. Because there was no context in which that would make sense. But what did he say?
Yeah, you're giving him a lot of credit here.
What
because
did he
Jason,
say?
There's a lot that he says that isn't totally
but
making
what,
sense.
What could he possibly have said here?
What must be what?
I can't hear anything else.
Instead of wiped, I mean, it could be what? So my butt's been what? But I don't know. I can't substitute something for butt.
The question wasn't, what's going on with your butt? It had nothing to do with butts. Listen again.
What must be what?
Unless he stumbled and, like, it's a stutter?
What must be what?
Is it possible he was just making noises?
Like what old people do when...
Ba-ba-ba-ba!
Yeah, when they were sung? Habasha!
Ba-ba-ba-ba!
Like Adam Sandler noises?
Ba-ba-ba-ba! Is it possible that that's what it is? It can't be my butt's been wiped.
No.
It can't be that. But what did he say? And no one is asking. No one is saying, could you, your what has been wiped? What? No one said anything. They just went along with it. And I haven't heard a single reporter who was there clarify what it is he said, despite the fact that this kind of has gone viral. I'm not making, this is actually him.
What must be what?
So terrifying to think about.
I can't get it out of my head. This is the president. And you say what you will about Donald Trump, and he certainly has had some fumbles in words. Joe's had a lot of them. Like
got
a lot
of highlight reels.
To the point of, I do think it's reasonable to be somewhat concerned. Although, again, I suppose if he is saying what we said he said, I'm assuming it's him doing it, not someone else, and that's reassuring.
What must be what?
It's reassuring. He cares deeply about hygiene. It's the Jason Rance Show.